Accession number 20670, Reel 3.
Knew that, and I just got off the carrier, dropped on the ground, and as I did so, a shell came through, and the shrapnel from the shell killed Cox. If I'd have stayed on there, it would have killed me as well, because it must have hit us both, because, we were both together. But he was obviously doing it to get me out of the way of this fire, you know.
Strange, you were shouting.
And unfortunately, it didn't happen, it didn't work that way. Because, as I say, my crew had been killed by two gunner in the back and
another. We'll come to that just in a moment, if we may. So we're back to our first night.
Right, first night. Well, first night we went from...
You didn't go up on the gantry. So you spent the first night and...
We moved off then to Marseillais. From Marseillais we went in to relieve the Oxford and Bucks Light Infantry, and they were in slit trenches on Hill 113.
Joseph Abbott, end of Reel 3. Joseph Abbott, Reel 4. So you got to Hill 113.
Mm-hmm.
And what did you see there when you arrived?
Well, the carriers and the drivers had to stay just back of it, you know. The only carrier that came up was the command carrier with the wireless in it, and that was sort of dug into sort of deepish hole.
That wasn't your carrier?
No, that was the Timber Woods. That was the troop officer before he was killed.
Right.
We, the gunner and myself, we went up with the other gunners and commanders of the troop, and took over from the Oxford Bucks. Now, they were in just little sort of holes dug out, actually not deep enough to get standing up, but just enough to get your legs like that in and sit up with sufficient room for your head. And just above your head was a sheet of corrugated, which just not corrugated, of metal, which had been used as a landing craft, you know, taken off a landing craft, and that had been put over the top with soil on top, which we thought at first was a bit of a nuisance when you were getting in and out, because you couldn't manoeuvre very well. However, it was we took over, as I say, from the Oxen Bucks, and they muttered one or two holes as we took over and said, you know, sod you a lot, sort of thing, and that.
Why was that?
Well, we soon found out, because the slightest movement at all, and it brought over a shower of mortars or Nebelwerfers, or what we used to call moaning minis. Now, they were a six-barrel mortar, which sort of sent five, followed by a six slightly lagging, so that if you were daft enough to put your head up when the five went off, that might just catch you, you know. But the mortars, that's why I say we were lucky, because of this soil on top of ours, we got a 5-centimetre mortar, which hit the top of the dugout, and it just blew the sort of soil and filled the place with dust and everything. But fortunately, my gunner and myself were okay, you know.
But what was your gunner's name?
The gunner, that was that was the lad he got killed to 3 days later too. What was his name? What was I said it earlier. Norfolk lad, I mentioned it. It'll come to me.
Yeah.
However, this was a sort of thing. If slightest movement at all there, you're under observation all the time, and you just got a load of any movement, you got a load of mortars or whatever. Made it rather difficult if you had to try and get to a latrine trench, which was a little bit behind the other bits, you know. And The troop officer came up, and he said that, first of all, first night it was dark. He said, well, I want a volunteer, you, you know, come round with me. And we sort of went round to see if any enemy were in the near vicinity, just within a few hundred yards or so.
However, were you walking or were you...
Well, he was charging round. I was more or less thinking, well, I should be doing it like an Indian, you know, but he went. really charging out. But in Normandy, the Bocage country, the sort of lanes were sunken, and they had dugouts. The Germans had put dugouts at the banks, which they could just sort of slide in, which you couldn't see from above, obviously. However, there was nobody there, and we got back all right. And then he explained, he said, we're expecting a counter-attack with tanks. So he said, if they come, let the tanks roll over the top and deal with the infantry. Well, the little thing that we were in, I thought, well, if a tank track goes over this, it'll flatten the lot, you know. However, later on, there came the sound of tanks, and next to me on the right was a, in the trench there, was a, what they call a Piat. They had a Piat that was a projectile infantry anti-tank, as they called it, Piat gun. And it fired like a long egg, a rocket bomb, you know. And unfortunately, they didn't always work particularly well. However, this laddie fired it, and we heard this clanking coming, and it hit the corner of whatever it was, because you couldn't see particularly well, it was black, you know. And it must have veered off, and the next thing was the clang at the turret at the top of the tank had opened, and somebody shouted, what, those BH is going on, you know. It was one of our sort of British tanks which had been in an attack and had lost its way a bit, you know. So we were fortunate that night, we were let off pretty light. But it was a place where, as I say, you couldn't move. You had to go down to get water and things like that. Well, as soon as you moved, overcame the sort of artillery or whatever, you know, which made it rather awkward. And we had to stick that for some days on there. Not, I can't just think how many it was, four or five days, something like that. And then we moved towards the River Orne, I think it was, and ultimately we went across to the Forest de Grimbosque, I think it was called, and then we put in a night attack in there with what they call Monty's Moonlight. I don't know if you've ever heard of that. It was projected onto the low cloud, the searchlights, which sort of threw the light back on, but it sort of illuminated both sides, really. However, we survived that, and
so what were you actually attacking then?
Germans. Yeah. Part of the Hermann Göring division was down there at that time. There were quite a number. You see, the object of Montgomery was to keep all the German sort of arms, if it possibly could, round that area and the Caen area to allow the Americans to get through at the bottom end, you see, in the south end. So,
remember that attack? What did you attack them with?
Well, just your artillery fire and your own sort of small arms, automatic weapons and things like that. But we got through that. I came across I think it was an RWF carrier which had been hit by some mortar or something and set fire to it, and it was grotesque because the figures were still at the driving wheel but totally burned, you know, and it was just a sort of the bone structure, I should imagine, but just like an object that's been badly burned and that. And it was just there, the crew were in it, and it had just been burned, you know. That, I think it was a RWF carrier, that was. But from there, what happened now? From there, we took some prisoners, some young prisoners, only about 16, 17 they must have been, but they were from the Hermann Göring division. And we took some of those prisoners, and then we moved on to... This was all taking place in August, and we moved then to Martin. Sorry.
Where was it that you got hit, your carrier got hit?
Oh, this was a bit on, yeah, a little bit on. Well, I said a bit, it was two days on, to be quite honest. But this... the next job we had to do was to recce a wood, I think it was Bois de Ra, and we had to join up with two troop, that was an armoured car troop, and Pounder was the Lieutenant Pounder was the troop officer's name, I remember, and Humphreys was the sergeant, troop sergeant at the time. But we joined up with them and then moved off towards this wood, and then we had to, the woods were just tracks in through and very difficult places, actually. So we started in, but of course it was atrocious weather at the time, and we just got bogged. So it was a case of trying to get the vehicles unbogged. Fortunately, there was no enemy within the immediate vicinity that you really had to worry about. However, night fell, we were still in there, and during the night, I remember, there was an artillery barrage came, and that was, we found out later, from our own artillery, the divisional artillery, which bombarded. It was a box barrage, which that means they put it down into a sort of box shape, and, you know, hopefully anything within that box gets there. However, we were very fortunate. We had one of our lads got wounded in the wrist, and Pounder got a wrist wound, if I remember, and Humphreys, I think, must have got a bit of shell shock, I think. But when that had subsided, we could hear armoured vehicles starting up and that, and this apparently turned out to be some German tanks who were using the night time, because it was approached the Fallows Gap, it was around that area. They were using night to try to get away from there, because during the day, if they'd have moved in the day, they would have been eliminated, you know. So we heard this going, and then suddenly out through the front of us came a figure, and this was a German. So what he was doing, whether he was trying to get away, whether he was lost, I don't know. But the first intimation we had was, I think it was Ted Maddox, shouted, "A bloody German," and that's all you heard. And the fellow must have been just as surprised as we were, because he just sort of stuck still. And we took him prisoner. And then for the remainder of the night and when the following morning started to lighten up a bit, we got him to make some tea for us while we got the carriers and things out, you know. So the Germans, in the meantime, the tanks had moved off a bit. But we continued. When it was sort of daylight, we continued, and I had to toss up because Humphreys had got a bit shell-shocked, apparently. Sergeant Humphreys in the armoured car. It was a light recce car, actually. And Sergeant Sedgwick and myself had to toss up to see who went in this with the light recce car to go around the edge of the wood to see if there's any more, you see. And I lost it, and I went on, which, in a way, was fortunate, because we got fired on once from the right-hand side, but the heavy armoured car, which was behind me, I called him up, and he came up and, you know, sprayed it with bees, and that sort of quietened things for a bit, and then we carried on. And it was misty sort of morning. The next thing I saw were figures darting about down the road, so I called the heavy up again. I thought, well, I better have a bit of weight here. Unfortunately, they were Canadians, and we'd linked up with the Canadians there. They were coming in from the north, from the Carn area, you know, and we linked up. We were on the sort of edge there, the borders of the Canadians and the British Army. So I think it was about the 16th that was.
Do you know where exactly it was you met them, you linked up with them?
Well, all I can say, it was, I think it was the Bois de Roi, the sort of the edge of the forest there, but I don't know for sure. Before that, I missed out the Martainville bit, the St. Logie's farm, which we had to recce this so-called farm just beyond Martainville, and we went through the forward infantry positions, and as we went through, they again were using the general encouraging words, you know, but which I won't repeat, but I had to go with my gunner on foot to the left into a sort of little shallow. Sorry. And on the right, one of the carrier sections had to approach the farm buildings. And they go going through a sort of wheat field, I think the wheat would be about this high at the time. As they approached the farm, all of a sudden the 88s opened up. They were hidden by the buildings, etc., and camouflaged and that, and they opened up. And that's where Eberly and Bambi Hughes, he was another, he got wounded. Hughesy I got killed. Those three in the carriers, they got killed there. And then I was, firing from the left-hand side to try and divert some sort of attention, when just in front of me, Timber Woods suddenly stood up. This was the troop officer. And he turned round as if he was going to shout some orders to some, you know, whether to me or to, I don't know. But as he turned round, of course, a spando opened up and he got it straight through the back, you know, in the back of the head and that. And of course, that killed. So I went forward with Alec Grant to sort of see if we could do anything. And unfortunately it was too far gone. I put a field dressing on, but it didn't do any good at all, you know. But
was he conscious?
Pardon?
Was he conscious?
Oh no, he was just hopeless. It was, you could tell as you got there, he was just gone, you know. But it was, you see, he's still, even Timber, he was an officer and that we know, but he was, in a sense, still in his mind behaving as he would have done in England on a scheme, you know, which was understandable because it's easily done, you know. But the, as I say, it was a pity, he was a nice lad. So we came back, sort of got back as best we could for getting Timber back, and then we had to withdraw then to where behind us some armoured cars had been set on fire and some of their crews had been killed as well. And we lay more or less with all this stuff burning round us, and then we were withdrawn to go back to the squadron and we're told to go and recce further over on the left. So out we go again. This was still on the 14th of August. I go again. Alec Grant was in the carrier in front of me, and we're going up a track toward a little copse. No sign of anything at all. When suddenly there was a great flash and bang, you know, and Alec Grant's carrier had gone over a treble teller mine, and it just, Alec disappeared. And it just folded the front, I found, after when I went to it, folded it, all the armour plate, it just folded like paper, you know, you fold a piece of paper back. I saw Andy Munker, that was his driver, he jumped out and he got wounds down the side of his face here, and little Alec Towell, who was the gunner in the back, he was only a, I think he came from Northampton or somewhere, he was only a fella about this big, and he'd been blown completely out of the back, although he was okay, still living, and he wasn't sort of visibly injured in any way, but obviously it had, you know, had its effect on him. So we got them and turned our carriers, because I was second carrier, turned our carrier as best we could, seeing that there were no more mines about, and withdrew to a copse where we could take up some sort of position in case, you know, you never knew whether you were going to get attacked after that, because you never knew where they were going to be. And we got into this field and, excuse me, got positioned as best we could, and suddenly overhead flew a load of Lancaster bombers, and the tail gunner of one of the bombers suddenly opened fire on us in this field, thinking possibly, or maybe not, but thinking we might be enemy, or failing that, he was just clearing his guns ready for in case he had to beat something. So we put out, they gave you yellow-orange panels to put out, you know, if you, anything supposedly happened, and if you had time to do it. We put these out and a bit of orange smoke, and we got nothing further from that. But just as soon as we'd done that, behind us in the hedge came some tanks bursting through. And these were the, I think it was the, was it a 5th or 4th yeomanry or something? They'd come through. Fortunately, they were our own, you know, British tanks, so it was a...
But you didn't know till they...
Well, we didn't know. We didn't know we were there, because, you see, the trouble with... when you're with reconnaissance is that you can go out and go forward, and yet people behind don't always know where you are, how far you are, even though you communicate as best you can. It doesn't always get through the channels as quick. And, of course, they possibly didn't know we were there initially, and we didn't know they were coming anyway. And this is what happened. It happened on, you know, one or two occasions. But that was the... perhaps communication wasn't quite as quick as it is today, you know, but this happened on one or two occasions. But that was the 14th, and then on the 16th was when we... had to forward, lost some of our crews, obviously, and some of the carriers, so we had to amalgamate with some of four troop who'd also had some trouble, and we had a replacement officer called Dusty Miller, I remember. He took over the troop, and we were sent on another recce then, and going down, as I say, through that field, and he was in the front carrier, And these 88s opened up again, and he fortunately was able to turn and get out. As I turned, my carrier, because my driver had had to go from the previous business, had had to go back for treatment. I was driving, and I had a Corporal Woods this time in my place in the carrier, in the command seat in the carrier. And as I turned, it was fortunate for me, I suppose, really, but I must have been sort of leaning forward, because you turned it by, you know, wrenching on the wheel business. And as I turned, I got hit with an 88 through diagonally across the rear, from the left rear to the right, which came out through the armour plate behind my head, and just, you know, through, as it must have been an arm piece and shell, and come through. But it had killed my gunner, Tommy Palmer, that was the lad I was thinking of, killed him on the way. And a chap we had as a passenger, who used to be the commanding officer's driver in one of his scout cars, I think, it killed him with the second shot. It came through from the left-hand side and killed him. Timber Woods, Corporal Woods, I should say, he jumped out. I saw him go out over the left-hand side, and as I saw him go, I thought, well, I can't do anything with my carrier, I can't move. So I went over on the right. But strange enough, the thing that comes back to me there is that during my life, I'd never liked onions. And on the way down there, there was a sort of an ammunition tin on the right, just above the driver's head, because there were no tops on a carrier, ring gun carrier, and a lid on it. And I lifted the lid, looking for something to I could eat, and all I could find was an onion, and it was covered in oil, and, oh, it was horrible. But I ate that onion, and I'd never eaten onions before, I never liked them. And I ate that onion, I can remember that plainly on the way down there. But, however, that's digressing a bit. But this was when, as I say, I ran out and I ran towards Coxey and that, and he shouted, jump up here, and then, of course, he was killed. And armoured cars were coming down a track towards us, possibly to help, and I saw the lead armoured car come down, and an 88 hit that and took the turret, and there was a commander and there was a gunner in that turret. It took the turret completely off, so they must have immediately been killed, and the driver, through some miracle, you see, in an armoured car they have braces on the turret, and one of them comes at the back of the driver, and when it's traversed to the front, those braces are at the back of the driver, so he can't get out until that turret's traversed. That bang traversed or knocked the turret off, but it traversed that at the same time, and he was blown through the door, and he escaped. That driver, that was the second time in 2 days he'd been hit. But he escaped the same year. But he escaped. Pritchard, I think it was. Pritchard. I think, I don't know, Jerry Pritchard. Or, yes, I think it was Jerry Pritchard. Fair-haired lad, I remember. So we had, supposedly, some of the Manchesters in support. We're supposed to have had them, but we never even saw them, we never turned up, so whether they'd had some other instruction in the meantime, I wouldn't know, because to get down there in the first place to recce, we had to go through the guard's armour div, and they were great big tanks, and we were only little things. And when I went through there, I thought, well, like, it's a bit much when they put in a little thing like this, and this, you know. But that was recce, and just, I suppose, big tanks are too expensive to expend, you know.
Do you know where that cottage was?
Oh, now then.
Or what it was near.
I don't know what the cottage was. I can perhaps give you.
I'll just so that we can pinpoint the area.
Yeah, I'll get it for you. Martinville.
Date it was.
Yeah, well, that was around about the 15th, 16th, that was, of August.
Of August, yeah. Right, okay.
16th of August. That was when we were linked with the Canadians. Wait a minute. Bois-Saint-André.
That was
the 17th Bois. Then. That would be the 17th, yeah.
Right. That was
Bois-Saint-André. I said André, yeah. Forgive my French. Yeah. But, now then, we'd been... I've got to think now, we'd been knocked about a bit, so I remember we'd got a new squadron leader just about then, and he came down to us. When we got back to squadron, he came down to us. Mm. And that was Sir Henry Davigdor Goldsmith who'd taken over, because our initial squadron leader had been wounded in early days of Normandy, you know.
But, so you had a terrible few days. I mean,
August...
And then...
Yeah, August was very bad. Well, yeah, it was. August was a very bad month as far as we were concerned, because it... in fact, as far as the squadron were concerned, because there were quite a lot of, you know, casualties in there at that particular time, and...
How did you cope with that? I mean, seeing your friends killed?
Well, it's very difficult to say, because you obviously... You tend, as I say, to react to things. You tend to sort of do things instinctively. And there were so many things happening then that you didn't get much time to dwell, you know, on... I mean, some people... The Corporal Woods, for example, he was a replacement. He was a reinforcement. He wasn't a original member of the troop at all, but the blast from that 88 when it hit us completely unnerved him. And when I saw him, he managed to get, obviously, to behind the cottage as well, further to the left. And he had a rifle, and he was holding that rifle so tight that it took me all my time to get his hands off the rifle. It really was, you've no idea the strength of that. Just he was down on one knee, and he's gripping that, and it must have really, you know, unnerved him. But it was the luck of the draw, really, because, you know... You could get into situations, and they obviously could really just knock you back a bit. And other times, something else happened, and it deflected it, and you just carried on because you knew you'd got something else to do. You know.
What happened to Corporal Woods? Do you know?
Well, as far as I know, he was sent back. I never saw him again, but he would be sent back hospitalised, I think. But I never. I never even heard about him at some of the reunions I've been to at all, and so I don't know quite what happened. Mm. But it certainly had its effect on him.
Mm. What was said to you when you got back to Squadron HQ? You know, what did they say about what had happened?
Well, they just wanted to know just what had happened, and they took the details. And as I say, we got a new squadron leader came. He was.
So tell me about, what was his name, Goldsmith?
Goldsmith.
We always
called him Goldsmith, but I think it was Goldschmidt, actually. But he came from B Squadron, but I'd had some prior knowledge of him from the 162 Royal West Kents, motorised unit, because I think he was with them for a time and moved on like I did to the recce. But he was a very big man, but he came... And he just said, how do you do, you know, and he stuttered very badly, and he just said, how are you, and I believe you've been knocked out of, excuse me a minute.
So tell me about Goldschmidt.
Well, he, as I say, he was a bullion broker from London, and I was to discover, sort of later on, he was a bit of a fatalist, really. He was one of those that... sort of could go through and not worry about being hit or anything, because that was his attitude, you know. And he was a fair enough chap, but he stuttered very, very badly, and it was unfortunate, really. But he was a very big man, very big. And I think he was a good officer. He was a good officer.
Did he say to you anything about what you'd been through?
Well, all he said was, I believe you've been knocked out of more carriers. I mean, I'd only been shot out of one carrier, but he got this tale of, I've been knocked out of more carriers than anyone. But so I said, no, I said, I've just lost my carrier. But So, I mean, that was his attitude. He was conversational and that was it. There was no, you know, he just wanted to make sure that you were all right and that was it, off, you know.